This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. They say that behind every great man, there's a great woman, sometimes more than one. That was certainly the case with Mozart. Throughout his life, the musical genius was influenced and inspired by several strong women who surrounded him. And no one better to talk about this than a woman conductor and, in fact, author of the book Mozart's Women. As we continue our Mozart Week celebration, we have invited conductor and writer Jane Glover to our studios. Jane, there's been a glut of Mozart biographies over the years. Have the women basically gotten short shrift in them?
Not completely short shrift, but not completely full shrift either, I think would be my tactful answer. And I think possibly nobody has ever quite concentrated on him coming out of a domestic context completely before. And, of course, that in his case meant largely women. Now, of course, my book is not entirely about women, by any means. I don't ignore the men in his life at all. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I don't ignore at all the most important man in his life, really, who was his father, with whom he had a very complex relationship. Much of it very good, some of it very bad. But it's interesting to see how Mozart emerged from a household that was first dominated, apart from the father, by a mother and a sister, both of whom were very important in his development, and then, as an adult, by his wife and her family, which was almost entirely was entirely female, actually, because his father-in-law, he never knew, had died before he mm-hmm. had married Constanze. And this, I think, is a very interesting way of looking at genius.
Yeah, and in the Observer earlier this month in the UK, their review of your book says it should, quote, finally rescue poor Constanze from the character assassination in Amadeus, in the movie, where she is portrayed as kind of an airhead, a space cadet. that seems not to have been Constanze Weber at all.
It's I have to say that I admire Peter Schaffer's play Amadeus very, very much. I think the movie was less admirable, but neither of them did justice to Constanze. She really came out of it very badly, and it's a preposterous misrepresentation of the woman she was, really. For sure, she was a fun-loving, lively, interesting girl who was certainly enjoyed her sexual encounters with her husband. But there was much, much more to her. She came from a family of highly gifted singers, and she herself was a highly gifted singer. She was greatly intelligent. She was an all-round musician. She spoke several languages. And as we discover, actually, more after Mozart died, she actually had a huge business head on her. And it was that business head which actually sorted out his legacy after his death, which actually managed to provide for her children and herself as an impoverished widow, and then actually to get Mozart's music published and therefore secure.
Mm. Although this head for business seems not to have helped while Mozart was alive and he was mishandling all the money and...
Yeah, well, give her a chance. you know, she was 29 when he died.
Yeah.
They had been married for just 9 years. During that 9 years, she had six pregnancies, at least. We only know about the ones that came to term. We don't know about the miscarriages. She'd been ill. She was looking after a very lively husband and some small children, some of whom died. And, you know, she was in her 20s. And also, it was the nature of life at that time that, you know, the men did the providing
right.
and the women did the domestic things. Once Constanze realized, as late as 1790, what terrible trouble financially they were in as a family, she did something about it, actually. When Mozart was on a trip to Berlin and out of Vienna, she actually turned everything around. She organized a loan, she moved house, she arranged everything with publishers. And Mozart, you can tell from the letters that he wrote to her from Berlin and on that trip, when he's now addressing her almost as a business partner and with such gratitude that finally he's been able to share this terrible burden that has been building up over the last 3 or 4 years of just intolerable debt.
Mm. We're speaking with conductor Jane Glover, whose book is called Mozart's Women. And while Constanze, his wife, is certainly a major figure in his life, one of the ironies is she was not his first choice. You mentioned that she came from a family of gifted singers. Mozart was initially attracted to one of her other sisters.
Yes, there were four of them. And I love to think of them almost like the Bronte sisters because, you know, they came from a fairly humble background. I mean, it was a musical family like Mozart's own. But all four of these women, of the sisters, were incredibly gifted, mainly as singers. Constanze herself was a singer. Her eldest sister, Josefa, was the first queen of the night, so we know that she was an amazing singer. The second sister, Aloysia, who was the one that Mozart fell for when he was 20 years old and she was just a little bit younger, she was, I mean, I keep saying it, but as a contemporary parallel, she was the Renée Fleming of her day. She really was the greatest singer in Vienna. And it's one of the things that attracted the two to each other, really. It was not just that they were, you know, the normal attraction of a young woman, because all that definitely went on and was with tremendous excitement and enjoyment on both sides. But there was also this added attraction of huge talent. But, you know, that he...
happened?
She made other arrangements, you know. They parted with tears because Mozart had to move on. When he came to find her a year later, you know, I think she just got a very nice... She just was about to be invited to Vienna. She was obviously had this glittering career in front of her. He was this funny little small chap who had no job to go to except as a court organist in Salzburg, which for heaven's sake was in the middle of nowhere if you're working in Munich and Vienna, which is where she was. You know, and she thought she could fry better fish and indeed married a very glamorous actor almost as soon as she got to Vienna. But, you know, the two families came together again after Mozart had, moved down the line and married Constanze.
Married the next sister, yeah.
And once everybody was in Vienna, the two families were in Vienna, they were in and out of each other's houses the whole time. And most important for us is that he went on writing music for Aloysia. And, you know, she still inspired him in a huge way and, in a way, taught him how to write vocal music.
Well, the opera... Abduction from the Seraglio has the characters of Constanze and Belmonte, which seems to be a kind of reflection of the courtship between Constanze Weber and Mozart. And the irony here being that it was the sister, Aloysia, who was known for singing the role of Constanze at opera houses around Central Europe at that time.
Well, I'm always reluctant to try and draw parallels between life and art, certainly with somebody like Mozart. I mean, some composers are very autobiographical in their music, and you can always tell whether they're having a good day or a bad day, or a good year or a bad year. With Mozart, you can't often do that. However, there is one occasion when I think, you know, the parallels between life and art are just too close to be more than a coincidence. And that is, as you say, the writing of Die Entführung aus dem Serail, The Abduction from the Seraglio. It was a coincidence that the name of the character, because the play on which it is based is called Belmonte und Constanze, that the name of the character is Constanze, and it absolutely coincides with the time that he's wooing the sister that he's about to marry. And so, you know, when one hears the music written for Belmonte singing about Constanze, you feel this is Mozart singing himself to his own beloved. When you hear them singing a love duet at the end of the opera, you hear that you think this must be a little bit of autobiography there.
Well, let's hear a little bit, this duet between the characters of Constanze and Belmonte from Mozart's opera The Abduction from the Seraglio. Die Welt an excerpt from Mozart's Abduction from the Seraglio, and we are talking about Mozart and specifically about the women in Mozart's life with conductor Jane Glover. She is author of the book Mozart's Women and my guest on Soundcheck, and also appearing on Evening Music throughout this week, celebrating Mozart 250 here at WNYC. So we've talked a little bit about Constanze, his wife, about his wife's sister, Aloysia, who sang that role of Constanze in the opera for many, many years, before and after Mozart's death. Let's go back to Mozart's home life and his sister, who has gotten a fair amount of press over the years as the kind of long-suffering, put-upon, eventually discarded, perhaps musical genius of her own.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go along with some of that. I think she was extremely gifted as a musician. I wouldn't say she was a genius, and she wouldn't say that either. She was discovered by her father to be very musical as a child, and indeed he prepared a little music book for her of pieces for her to play, and it was in that music book that we find his annotations. I mean, you can see that in Salzburg now, in the museums. This book has got annotations saying that little Wolfgang, before the age of five, had learnt one of these pieces in half an hour one evening when he was, you know, four and a half or something. Just ridiculously gifted. So we see that almost as soon as Nannerl's talent has been discovered, actually the younger brother, by many years, was actually already creeping up on her and taking over. However, they had a sort of extraordinary childhood, because when the kids were, she was 11 and he was 7, the kids were taken on the road for 3.5 years, and they were exhibited all over Northern Europe. They were shown off before every crowned head you can imagine. They learned a whole lot of languages. They were exposed to all sorts of different cultures. They were admired and adored and well rewarded most of the time. The most extraordinary childhood, as in my own childhood, I was really sort of moved by this story, really excited by this story. Of course, what one doesn't think about is the flip side to all that. What on earth was it like travelling in sort of conditions, you know, you get in any European winter, for heaven's sake, in carriages and with horses and carriages, in having your own childhood illnesses in foreign languages, in foreign towns, when you don't have the medicines that your family is used to. Nannerl nearly died in Holland. Wolfgang often never died. I think this is actually crucial to both their adult life, that their resistance never really had a chance to develop against these infections, because they were always being sort of buffeted around. The good side of it was that they made music together constantly, that they were exhibited together constantly, that as they travelled together in these coaches on these interminable and freezing cold journeys, they actually created for themselves an alternative escapist world, which they called the Kingdom of Bach. And he was the King of Bach, and she was the Queen of Bach, and they drew little drawings, and of course, I love the fact that this was all fired by the fact that they met real kings and queens, that they'd seen real palaces, they had seen, you know, their imaginations were constantly being fed by sort of exotic and different worlds and different peoples, and so they created their own. And all this, really, for Nannerl, the sister, came to an end in her mid-teens, when it was decided that the parents decided they would concentrate simply on displaying the talents of the boy, which were, of course, hers were good, his were phenomenally good. And, you know, he was obviously a bigger fish to fry, and that therefore he was going to be taken off to Italy and shown off to all the, you know, they'd done Northern Europe, now they were going to do Southern Europe. And poor Nannerl was excluded from that. And I think that must have been a very bad moment for her. She could only learn of their experiences by letters. And indeed, when he came back and told her all about it, I mean, they were still sort of best friends, and there were very touching letters that he wrote to her when he was on the road as a teenager in Italy. And he kept saying things like, you know, I've learnt a new game here in Rome and I can't wait to tell it, to show it to you and we can play it together. Or you would love to hear what the trumpets do in this Bologna Cathedral. And my sister would love this particular site. And he adored travelling and he really still wanted to share it with her. And she was excluded from all that. Once he married, she only met Constanze once when Mozart brought Constanze to Salzburg about 18 months after they'd been married, and there was a rather tense time, I think, in Salzburg where they were all together, and then they never saw each other again, brother or sister. Though the sisters-in-law met much, much later, and there was a rapprochement in the 19th century. But for Nannerl, she then had to look after her rather difficult father, and I think made a rather desperate marriage in her mid-30s to a man much older than herself. She inherited 5 unruly stepchildren who loathed her. They moved to the middle of nowhere, to actually the rather beautiful village of St. Gilgen, which is not very far, actually, from Salzburg now, but for then it was a good day's journey away. And she was then cut off, actually, even from the music-making she'd been doing in Salzburg, and suddenly her life was sort of, her musical life was over. Mm. And I think she suffered for that a great deal. And it wasn't until her own husband died in 1801, long after her brother was dead, that she actually moved back to Salzburg and picked up the reins of her musical life and became actually a very respected teacher.
Well, now, Mozart wrote pieces for Nannerl, for his sister, and also pieces for the two of them together to play, which, you know, kind of goes back to the musical relationship as well as the familial one.
Yes. And you know, we often think, oh, now, what sort of forms of music did Mozart invent? Well, you know, possibly the piano concerto, certainly, because he could play those himself. But I love the fact that he wrote these piano duets for himself and his sister to play, because, you know, you think of two people at one keyboard, you know, with bodies touching, hands intertwined. And, you know, in the 19th century, this was often a vehicle for sort of serious flirtation.
Uh-huh.
But the fact that these siblings had been playing music together side by side all their childhood lives, there's something intensely sort of nonchalantly, innocently physical about this music, which can only come from two talented siblings playing it. And that's what I adore about the piano duets that Mozart wrote for him and Nannerl to play. And by the way, we can tell from the pictures, there's a portrait of them playing together, and she played the primo part and he played the secondo part. And there's absolutely no difference between the two parts, that they were, as pianists, completely equal.
Mm. All right, let's hear a little bit of the Sonata in D Major, Kerschel 381, for piano 4 hands, the third movement, music that Mozart wrote for himself and for his sister Nannerl. Mozart, from the piano sonata for piano 4 hands, actually, in D major, Kerschel 381, music written for Wolfgang Amadeus and his sister Maria Anna, nicknamed Nannerl. We are talking about the women in Mozart's life with conductor and author Jane Glover. Her book is called Mozart's Women. There is a picture on the back of the book, Jane, that shows the crossed hands of Mozart and his sister. Actually, the Mozart iconography can be a kind of a dicey thing. There's a famous picture that has long been thought to be Mozart at a keyboard, but we now know it to be like a minor nobleman of the day. You're pretty sure that this one is Mozart and his sister?
Oh, no question. That is Mozart and his sister. And I love those crossed hands, don't you?
Yeah. Well, you mentioned how these four hands pieces could be, you know, a vehicle for seduction and flirtation. And some of these pieces Mozart later on actually used for that purpose with some of the Weber sisters.
Well, it's interesting that as soon as he'd met Aloysia Weber and fallen for her, he wrote to his father, said, please send me the music beforehand. He obviously had an idea of what he was going to do with that.
Now, you know, there's much more that we can talk about in terms of Mozart and affairs with other singers and, you know, writing pieces for them and whether those pieces were, you know, talismans of some kind of physical encounter or something. But there is a woman about whom I've rarely read much at all, and that is Mozart's mom. Tell us a little bit about Maria Anna, the mother.
Maria Anna, the mother, yes. Wonderful woman. Came from a very impoverished background because her own mother was widowed with two small daughters when she was quite young, and in fact, I think probably spent some time in a poorhouse, what we would call a poorhouse or an almshouse in Salzburg. And we're not even sure if Maria Anna had any formal education, though she was, she could read and write and was highly intelligent and very observant and obviously quite musical. And we don't know how she met Leopold Mozart. But at some point, obviously, they met and they married. And this was an extraordinary change in life for her because he was by then a court musician, fairly lowly at court. But and then, of course, she had seven children, of whom only two survived. But one of them was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And, you know, if you think of this woman who had been born in or brought up in a poorhouse, suddenly, through her children, was meeting every crowned head in Europe. Then back in Salzburg, when the children were growing up, of course, they had this beautiful house, the Tanzmeister House, which you can still visit in Salzburg, where they were very much at the sort of hub of musical life in Salzburg. And so there were musicians in and out of the house the whole time. She would have listened to her own children playing and practicing. She would have listened to that piano duet as they played it for the first time. I mean, can you imagine being the mother of your two children playing this thing and just hearing the kids around the house doing their thing?
I can't imagine being the parent of something like Mozart, where you just must think, where did this come from?
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's just baffling. Let me ask you, Jane, as a conductor yourself, having done this research into all of the women in Mozart's life, the mother, the sister, the wife, the girlfriends, I mean, has this changed the way you look at some of Mozart's works?
That's a very interesting question, because I've been conducting Mozart's music all my professional life, which is over 25 years now. I think it was the familiarity with the music and the passion for the music that I have that led me towards him and to the people around him, and therefore it was that way around. But of course, as you say, once you turn the coin, that what I have learnt does reflect, I think, on the way I perform the music. Now that I know so much about the women that he wrote for, I love that sort of detailed knowledge. You may not hear anything differently in the way that I'm doing it, but it certainly enriches what I do with it, and I love it for that.
Jane Glover is a conductor and author of the book Mozart's Women, and is also joining us on Evening Music this week as we continue our week-long celebration of Mozart 250. Here at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. Jane, thanks so much for being with us today on Soundcheck.
Great pleasure. Thank you, John.